Welcome to the Cannabis Connection. Happy Friday. Hope you had a beautiful week. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Santa Cruz Cannabis Talk Radio. My guest soon come. His name is Herb Daly. It's going to be a fun installment, our second installment. I'm trying to showcase the local music scene, the colorful tapestry that is Santa Cruz music community. And Herb's been in the community for a long time. He's a longtime resident of the beautiful Santa Cruz area. He has shared his lifelong love of Jamaican music for almost five decades. First visiting Jamaica in 1976, he ended up living there for the better part of a year, meeting and working with many, go ahead and close the door, many wonderful of the island's top artists and musicians, and laying guitar on a number of tracks in the main Kingston recording studios, since reggae ensembles such as the otherwise all-Jamaican Rastafarians, all while raising a family and serving his community. Realizing how crucial the bass is to the Jamaican sound, he switched from guitar to bass and has never looked back. Decades of working with Jamaican and West Indian musicians taught him to come correct with their music, as he has been passing on his knowledge and experience to the younger generations of aspiring reggae musicians. Welcome, Herb.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it sounds good, actually.
Appreciate you.
You got a nice voice for radio. You got a nice deep baritone. It sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, it's too bad I'm saddled with that, because I need to be a tenor when I'm up there.
Oh, yeah, you do. I'm pretty impressed with your vocal range. Here, you can pull this closer to you. You can get close to the mic. Levels are good, though. I like the sound. Well, welcome to the...
You've heard Boom Do I Live?
You, we had the jam, and you sang really well. I think I came to the Crow's Nest once with Tom back in the day when there was those old jams at the Crow's Nest.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. I wasn't singing back then, though.
That's right.
I was, just playing bass and letting other people come up.
That's nice. Here, you can put these headphones on, too, if you want. You don't have to. You can hear yourself a little better with the headphones, these ones here. Yeah, go for it. No, it's all right. And you live in the area, which is nice.
Yeah, I live around the corner from here, which is really nice.
That's great.
I was going to walk, and I should have, because the traffic was bad.
It's terrible.
On this Greenwich Road.
Yeah.
I was trying to, beat the freeway jam.
Yep. And you got a show tonight, right?
And yes, we're... playing Boom Dra band as I'm in is playing at Mozzali tonight.
Excited
for the legends of roots vocals, the Wailing Souls.
Mm, some of my favorite. Art of Affection.
They've been doing it for well over 50 years, and they're
that's amazing.
And they're so
they're great. It's going to be
revered.
That's right.
Reggae aficionados.
That's right. I like the way you put that, reggae aficionados, which we're lucky here in Santa Cruz. Where are your roots? Are you from Santa Cruz?
No, although I've lived here since 79.
So you're OG.
But I guess that, qualifies.
Honorary local status, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I actually grew up over in San Jose area, and as a matter of fact, I don't know how this may tie in with your cannabis show,
sure.
But I was I was in going to school there at Overfelt High School.
Cool, very
and,
cool.
And I used to hang out with some of the kids of the Mexican immigrants there.
Yeah, of course.
And one of them gave me a bag full of cannabis seeds that he'd
maybe pulled out of some of the
stolen from his brother. And so he gave them to me, and I went up on my parents' house roof and filled the rain gutter with potting soil since it was the summer and,
yeah,
you know, there's no rain,
yeah,
expected. So I just planted up about maybe 30, 40 plants.
Nice.
Along there. There were big trees.
Around the gutters?
Around the house, so you couldn't really see that from...
That's a smart move.
Anybody else's house.
It's like a gorilla grow urban style, San Jose style.
You know, at the time, I had never smoked. I was Mr. Science, pretty much. I just wanted to grow them, see what they, you know, how they came up and what they looked like.
How was it?
And pretty soon I had, like, you know, maybe 30 plants that were about, like, a foot and a half high.
Wow.
So, now this was the mid-60s.
Wow.
So, you know, cannabis was in the same legislation as, say, heroin or cocaine.
Yeah.
Or any of those.
Technically, it still is Schedule One.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, on a federal level. I mean, obviously, state laws have changed. Yeah,
yeah,
wild. I know it was pretty bad. I know a lot of people got in trouble in a bad way.
So anyway, I started, you know, bragging about it at summer school to people, and somehow the word got around to the daughter of the police chief of San Jose. And I came home one day of summer school, and there was a couple of cop cars parked in front of our house, and my mom's standing on the porch between two cops, you know, waving her hands, trying to explain what's going on, which she knew nothing about.
Yeah.
And, of course, I had to go, you know, cop to it, otherwise they would have taken her in, you know.
Oh, my goodness. So, wow.
Anyway, so they, since I was a good kid, good grades, and this was my only thing, they gave me 180 days in juvenile hall, of which I served about 45. I got a, you know, good behavior and all that.
Wow.
Although the second day I was there, a couple of guys found out why I was in there, and they took me around the back of the barracks and had my first taste of sin in juvenile hall.
That is classic. So
there's the story. Sorry, it was so...
No, I love it. Yeah. It's fascinating. So in a way, that's really timely, Herb, because that's kind of how I start most shows, is how'd the plant come into your life, right? And that's you know the drill without me even asking. And it's pretty interesting too that you were given seeds, so you weren't really even trying it yet. You just were experimenting with the garden side, which is fascinating, because I think a lot of people...
I'd never flipped anything or tasted or any of that.
Yeah, it was the seeds that were interesting.
So, yeah.
Fascinating.
But, I guess I could have followed up on that, but, you know, that kind of, cured me of that. And
sure.
Just checking some of the other...
Yeah.
Juvenile hall inmates. I figured, you know, I didn't want to take that to, you know, a higher level.
No, yeah, so pun intended.
It kind of discouraged me for a while.
Well, I'd love to learn. So that was in the 60s. But yeah, you spent some time. What drew you to Jamaica, or when did that journey? Like, how did that come about? Or maybe we could start with music. Sounds like you were into science and a good...
Well, no, I mean, I was into music by the time, you know.
Yeah.
I graduated high school, but I didn't play an instrument yet. I
got it.
Went to college and broke my leg skiing, and so I had plenty of time to, do whatever. So
yeah.
I went by a pawn shop, bought a guitar for $15 and a bass for $25.
Good for you.
And I started playing. I ripped off my brother's amp that he used to play accordion.
Oh, wow. How interesting.
It was a Supro. It was a really nice amp, actually.
Wow.
And I used a Wallensack tape recorder on record for the fuzz box. I don't think I've ever got a richer, creamier sound out of any, you know, stomp box than
amazing.
I got out of that thing.
How cool.
So, you know.
And it pieced it together.
When I started.
Wow. And so you started playing guitar and bass at the same time?
What's that? Well, I have the bass. I mostly play the guitar.
I didn't
really mess with the bass that much.
Got it. You had it kind of on standby.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I just took off from there in a couple of, you know, a couple of crappy college bands. I don't know if I can say that on the air, but
It's all right. Yeah, yeah. We'll try to avoid those other bad words that George Carlin talks about.
And I quit. Yeah, I'm not going to use any of those.
Yeah.
But I, you know, got a little more into music. My idols, of course, were like people like, you know, like Hendrix and Michael Bloomfield and, you know, just some of the, you know, good rock guitarists that were out at the time.
Yeah.
But I started to gravitate towards towards soul music.
Nice.
And I ended up with a band in the early 70s. They were all Filipinos except for me.
How cool.
And they were backing a couple of very clean, you know, well-scrubbed, I guess, Dionne Warwick clones.
Oh, very interesting.
They call themselves, I'm trying to remember what they could. Oh, the Duncan Sisters.
Duncan Sisters, nice.
And that was way back in the day.
Wow. In the South Bay area?
Pardon me?
Was it in San Jose area, like where you're from?
Yeah, it was in San Jose, nice. Fremont.
There. Fascinating,
and,
yeah.
And we, you know, I think went to Reno one time. They were going to go to Vegas and stay there for a while.
Oh, wow.
But at the time, I went with my roommates to see a guy by the name of Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Nice.
It actually wasn't Bob Marley at the time. It was just the Wailers.
The Wailers.
This was in, I think, late 73.
Wow.
And they started out with Rastaman Chant.
Yes.
It was just like a semi-religious experience for me.
I mean, wow. Just, yeah.
You know, it just hit.
I can empathize,
really hard. And
it's a powerful sound.
I mean, at the time, there was, you know, Bob, Peter, Bunny did not go on that tour, and his place was taken by their basically his teacher and mentor, Joe Higgs.
Wow.
Was singing harmonies and playing percussion on that.
Gotcha.
And Wire Lindell, in the, and of course, the two Barrett brothers.
The Barrett brothers. R.I.P., that family man just passed. That's timely.
Yeah, I mean,
he was around for so long. I was just,
I got to meet him, and I,
amazing.
I got a call, you know, a couple of calls from him when I was, you know,
amazing
on tour.
Good for you.
But,
didn't mean to interrupt, but so that was the Wailers in late 73.
Yeah, that was my first reggae show that I went to, although I was interested in reggae before. I mean, the you know, songs like the Israelites and Double Barrel. Double Barrel was actually Sly Dunbar's very first recording.
Really? I need to study up on these tunes. So that was a reggae track,
and that's
and Sly didn't Bob and the Wailers tour with Sly, or maybe I'm getting confused. There was
no Peter Tosh did.
Peter Tosh did, yeah.
Yeah,
got it. Wow.
And then, for a while, then so they had a disagreement. The Soul Syndicate rhythm section, Fully Fullwood, and
Wow.
In Santa Davis.
Wow.
So, which I got to see both of those. Actually, I got to open for Tosh in L.A. in Starwood.
Wow.
And that was a real amazing story because...
Yeah, tell me about it.
The one of the radio DJs was announcing that show, and he mentioned the name of our band, which was Roots of Creation. No relation to the band that's in New Hampshire now.
Ah, got it.
This was all Jamaican except for me.
Yes.
And he didn't know any of that. He just kind of conjectured that, you know, it was going to be the Rolling Stones. This is when they were chummy, when Tosh was chummy with them.
With the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember this.
And about 50,000 people converged on
this club
that had maybe a capacity of 850 or 900.
Oh, my gosh.
And people were trying to buy my backstage pass for
crazy, you know,
$75, $100. But if I sold it to them, I couldn't.
You could play. Yeah.
So,
wow, what a cool story.
You know, and
so
I got to, you know, meet them. I
amazing.
Already met Robbie in Jamaica. He gave me an impromptu lesson in the studio at Channel One after a session, about a quick bass lesson.
You know, really?
Which was pretty
amazing. You're talking about Robbie Shakespeare?
I was just brought me to the realization how clueless I was.
Amazing. Well, let's segue into that. So when did you go to Jamaica and you spent some time?
I realized that I couldn't learn more about the music unless I really went to the source. So
I see. I see.
Went there in February of 76 and stopped in New Orleans to visit some friends and
nice. Take
part in the Mardi Gras.
Good for you. Yeah, it's right now, pretty much.
And right out, yeah.
Yeah, this week.
And right after that, you know,
good for you.
Went to Jamaica, although I didn't really know anybody there, contact anybody there. I ended up in East Kingston at a boarding house.
Wow.
Room and bathroom. I didn't really have a kitchen or anything.
Ah.
But, you know, it was just something that I always wanted to do.
Yeah, you were drawn.
And, you know, I stopped in at a couple of the recording studios. And I struck up a relationship with, conversationally with Clive Chin.
Huh.
At Randy's studio on the parade.
Wow.
And, I used to go there almost every day, you know.
Wow.
Bring my guitar on the bus and...
And be at the studio.
Back then they had the big buses.
Yes.
All they got into these days is mini buses and the like, you know, private. They're the Jamaican version of Uber, I guess.
You know? Sure.
So, and...
So you were in Jamaica learning that genre of music in the 70s. That's a golden time for reggae.
Yeah, I was, you know, very, very lucky there.
Yeah.
Also, when I was hooking up with Jamaican musicians here in the States.
How'd that work?
And they were the ones that asked me to play guitar.
Really?
At first.
Nice.
Tony Moses, who used to be a DJ on KPOO and KPFA.
Okay.
And I was very lucky and very blessed to just come into reggae with Jamaican and West Indian musicians, you know.
Wow.
always, like I said, would always, like you said, would always tell me to, you know, show me how to come correct with the music.
Yeah.
And, of course, let me know in no uncertain terms when I didn't, you know. So,
for those that maybe aren't familiar with, what does that mean? And maybe like that bass lesson you alluded to earlier.
What's that, come correct?
Yes, yes, yes.
It just means, you know, play the music the way it's meant to be played.
Yeah,
you know?
Nice. Yeah.
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 I find that, you know, what's admired and respected in Jamaican music is very different than what's admired and respected in American music.
Mm.
In America, playing, you know, your, you know, faciles, solos and, you know, very, you know, fast, clever solos and...
Sure. Yeah.
You know, that's more what's respected and looked up to. Now, you don't find much of that in the Jamaican music.
Mm.
What you do find is a lot of, you know, very cool rhythmic stuff, tribal music, like where all the musicians are, you know, playing their parts and they're cutting in and out of each other to make a, you know, whole that's greater than the sum of the parts.
Nice.
And that's...
That's well said.
And that's,
yeah.
And a lot of,
took me a while to
a
learn
lot of
that.
American musicians don't really
think like that.
Understand that.
Sometimes silence and is loud, right? Sometimes
yeah,
the pulling out.
Sometimes it, you know, you skipping a note.
That's right.
Is more incisive than
playing,
you know,
all the time.
Anything you could play there.
Yeah.
And so
yeah, I like the way you said that.
That's why the. You know, you hear all these, you know, listen, you hear all these holes in the bass line. And
that's right.
You know, sometimes the drums. I mean, there
yeah.
was a time when, like, the one was just totally silent.
Yeah.
You know, everybody just, you know,
yeah.
play on that. And then on the one, they
pull
just,
out.
Yeah, pull out. And I always thought that was very, very cool.
Likewise. Yeah. Yeah. That's fascinating. I believe you mentioned the Rolling Stones, and there may be some footage. I don't know if I'm correct on this, but, like, yeah, Jamaican musicians trying to teach the Stones how to, yeah, the one drop and, you know, the bubble on the keys.
Yeah.
Simple things like that. They just, it was different. It was just very different.
And then, you know, they were very intrigued by that, too.
I bet.
You know, but it was... it was the difference, I think. I'll explain that later. But yeah, my time in the studio was it was around. An election year in Jamaica.
Interesting.
I went there, and I didn't know that. You know, and. The politics are much more important to the youth there,
wow,
than they are here.
Yeah,
because the, you know, the winning candidates, you know, they usually just funnel the infrastructure projects, work, construction, and the like into the areas, the neighborhoods that supported them.
Wow, I see.
And so,
I see.
You know, for, you know, a place with a lot of youth unemployment like Jamaica, that was very important, and they took their politics very seriously.
Wow, fascinating.
And so seriously that there were actually, it would be like if there were Republican and Democratic youth gangs and stuff.
Wow. Well, and there's kind of that a little bit, yeah.
Not of the youth.
No, not of the youth. No, yeah, but
know,
the...
I mean, these are, you
the,
know...
The, yeah, I you know, no, it's past...
Teenagers in early 20s and...
How interesting.
And they're, and, you know, it would be like if, you know, the Republicans went and, you know, shot up a Democratic...
wow.
You know, club.
Yeah.
House or something. And then,
sure. Or a little area where they knew a lot of...
Democrats would respond by, you know.
So like gang, like, yeah, gang so activity
was,
a bit.
Yeah, basically yeah. It's like having Democratic and Republican youth gangs.
In the, Jamaica. And
the politicians didn't really discourage them that much.
Sure.
You know, the people they interesting. Were supporting.
Yeah, yeah, because so, it's, yeah. You know, in a way, so they're constituent.
And wow. You know, there are a lot of cops around. There are a lot of soldiers around.
Yeah.
You know, mostly the people didn't run around with a lot of weed, you know?
Yeah, you hear it in the music.
You know, and
in Bob Marley's music, you hear a bit like 3 o'clock, roadblock.
Yeah.
You know, got to throw away my herb stock. It happened.
Yeah, I mean, you probably heard what happened to Peter Tosh. He got, you know, beaten by the cops a couple of times.
Jeez. Just for the flower.
And yeah. Just not being apologetic for it.
Sure. Yeah. Legalize it, that album.
So, anyway, the recording studios were kind of, you know, suffering because they're, you know, they wouldn't dare bring weed in. Only, you know, the stupid American like myself who bought a few twists from like his 12-year-old neighbor who, you know, got it from his big brother.
Wow.
And, you know, I'd stow it in my sock and bring it in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, pretty soon, they were looking forward to my getting there, you know.
You were the
and one of the,
you were know, the plug.
Yeah, and well, these guys would say, oh, whoa, way, the Daily Herb will come, you know.
That's nice.
And one of the wags there turned it around and say, what happened to Herb Daily? So that's where I...
That's it.
That's my stage name.
That is your stage name. I thought it was your name. I was telling people that's your name. It's a good stage name. That's beautiful. What a cool story. So,
anyway, that's...
Can you take us into the... How were the... So you were, like, spending a lot of time at these recording studios. And how would those sessions go? I'm kind of curious, too. Like, how did, you know, the different producers, for example, like Lee Scratch Perry or... That type of person in the...
The guy I dealt most with was a guy named Prince Tony Robinson.
Mm. And, cool.
And he produced a lot of great stuff at both Randy's and Joe Gibbs studios.
Oh, wow.
And
so Joe Gibbs was that person in the Wailers you saw that first time, right?
What's that? No, Joe.
Oh, that's, I'm sorry.
Joe Higgs.
Joe Higgs. Sorry.
Joe Gibbs was a producer. He wasn't really a musician or anything, but he,
yes,
you know, had a great ear for music. And
wow.
And actually, in his studio, I got to play in a session by a singer, great singer, Owen Gray, and. They didn't like my guitar, so they took it off of there. But
oh boy,
the track was I still got paid, but
good for you.
The track was good, and it was DJ'd by U-Roy.
Oh yes,
and
U-Roy.
I got to see a U-Roy session with all the lights in the studio darkened, and then all you could see was the big chalice there blazing.
Ah, amazing! That's special.
It was quite a moment.
And U-Roy was kind of an upsetter, or was he toasting on it, or how did
he was toast? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And the chalice and was going
a few lines, and then you know stop, and you know, but you know the way you hear it, it's all one.
Yeah,
it's all one.
Yeah, when it was finished, it was this
stream. I guess.
Yeah,
and
how cool.
So that was real nice. It was on the Owen Gray song that I played on was called Turning Point. It was a song by Tyrone Davis, soul singer.
Cool.
And the dub that I forget what the dub that U-Roy did was called, but I remember having, you know, the big wheel keeps on turning.
Yeah.
And Bobby Lawn burning.
Yeah. Little Proud Mary in there.
I was there for that.
That's cool, Herb. It's amazing.
I just kind of blundered into it, you know.
Yeah.
I had met great guitarist Chinna Smith before and got together with him and his brother to jam a couple of times.
Nice.
And, you know, Chinna's just, I just respect him to the fullness.
Wow.
As far as he's just a, you know, a sponge as far as learning music. You know, we'd
I see
jamming there and he'd say, wait, show me that again.
You know? Really?
And, you know, he'd just pick it up and then he'd be playing it.
Wow.
And his brother Leonard was playing rhythm guitar, and he was hard on his brother Leonard.
Really?
He just said, chill, man, play the chords right, then play the chords them right, you know?
Yeah.
And whatever he said to him must have worked, because
he would.
A couple of years later, I saw Leonard on rhythm guitar backing up Jimmy Cliff at the
Berkeley
Community Theater.
Nice.
With Ernest Ranglin playing lead.
Wow.
And, you know,
that was, it worked out.
So
sometimes you need those hard teachers. But it's always harder with your family sometimes, too.
Yeah.
Brothers can be hard on brothers.
Yeah, and you know that.
Yeah, I definitely can empathize. And that's, you know, what's, yeah, that's so interesting, too. I still want to hear, you mentioned somebody gave you a quick bass lesson. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because so far we've talked about guitar playing.
Robbie.
Yeah, know. Robbie. Yeah, I want to hear his wisdom or, you know, even any kind of tidbit.
He just showed me a couple of different things. What was that song? I think it might have been a Johnny Clark song. He was just playing bum, 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 bum. Bum, 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 bum. And that
nice.
Was so hard for me to get for some reason. You know? I was a guitarist. What can
yeah,
I say?
It was different. You know? Yeah. Of course. No, you were playing guitar. And that's kind of, I can empathize with that too. My introduction deep in roots music was, I grew up near South Lake Tahoe and they had a reggae festival, a Tahoe, like old school, there is a newer one that people know about now called Lake Tahoe Reggae Festival, but there was this small roots music, and I remember I participated there with my family, little kid, maybe 6 or 7 years old, and then, you know, I got a Bob Marley CD at that festival.
Were your parents into reggae?
They were. My mom was, and my dad was happy to. My dad was always interested in music. My mom had all the vinyl, and really, my mom was the one that took us. They never played music growing up, but she always wanted to play music. And so when we had the opportunity as young children, she took us and we learned piano lessons. We learned a little music theory. We could read music. And then they started bringing out the vinyl records. And so you mentioned Jimi Hendrix. We listened to a lot of Jimmy. Yeah. My dad was from like the Midwest. So like Allman Brothers, kind of Southern rock style, Marshall Tucker Band. But my mom was the one with some old school Bob records and Peter Tosh records. And we wanted to go. And then I had an uncle that was really into the Grateful Dead. And he gave me a Grateful Dead compilation of reggae artists singing the Dead, which was like Judy Mowat, Dennis Brown, maybe the Wailing Souls. They're singing Dead songs, but it was reggae. It's a good interesting
one. I was backing the Congos for
nice.
A few years.
And, nice, I love the Congos.
They sang a
Dead song.
Wheel.
Yes, that's a good yeah. No, it's a beautiful. It's
and
a beautiful album.
Do that with that one with a Congo.
Nice, that's cool. Yeah, and that.
I would just want to say that I was a huge Grateful Dead fan in high school.
Very cool. You were kind of in their neighborhood.
I used to bring, I used to comb my hair down over my ears and hitchhike up to the Heights.
I was just about to say, because that was the time.
You know, cut school.
Yeah, because they were, they were living up there. But I think they originally were Menlo Park.
Somewhere in the peninsula.
Somewhere, yeah. And then, of course, Haight-Ashbury was the big, well, yeah. They were one of many great groups that were just blowing up in that. It's amazing.
At that time.
And still to this day, I still feel the, I love the history there. And you know, I have a 2-year-old and we, for my birthday, we went and stayed in Chinatown, but we walked the Haight and I took her to North Beach, Little Italy and Fisherman's Wharf and want her to feel the, she loves music. She's still young. She's very small. She's a toddler, but you can kind of feel it just walking around the history, a lot of history.
I find that, like, toddlers, babies, you know, children are very open.
They're very open.
To,
especially
all
rhythm.
Kinds of music.
Yeah. Yeah. She's very percussive. So my wife's brother, he has a little home studio. And so we'll take Sophie, like, it was Valentine's this week. And we dropped her off with grandma, and her brother's got the music studio in the back. He's got a drum kit set up and a nice kind of upright piano. And he put her on the drum kit while he played upright, and the upright's behind the drum kit. So she was kind of feeling the vibrations of the piano, and she was playing drum. I have some video of her on a drum kit at 2. I mean, she wasn't reaching the pedals. But she was playing the snare and the toms and had a little hi-hat going, and it was beautiful. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, she was open to it and just kind of, you could tell she was having a lot of fun, that joy, that pure joy, which music can bring.
But I kind of fell out of love with the Grateful Dead after a little bit because... in that time, psychedelics were all over the place. I got dosed a couple of times.
Oh, no.
I didn't know. I was just a dumb kid. I didn't know what those little pieces of paper floating around the wine bottle. I thought they were pieces of the label or something, you know. So I got dosed a couple of times, and it didn't go very well.
Sure.
I wasn't ready for...
If you're not ready for that, yeah, that's... Yeah, and that's also youth. Yeah, that's... Being too young and strong.
Yeah,
LSD is very strong.
One thing where I was, you know, in the college infirmary for 3 days. And,
oh no, that's a lot.
They gave me something, whatever they gave me, it put me into a coma for.
How scary!
So,
you fell out of love.
With that. And then you know, I found out that the Dead were big dosers. They used to dose everybody. Used to dose Bill Graham. They thought that, you know, dosing people was doing them a public service, so which I didn't agree with.
No, I don't agree with that either. It was kind of a weird, different time. That was the Timothy Leary, Summer of Love.
Yeah, I mean...
It was different times.
It was pretty tumultuous.
It was tumultuous, and it was almost like they thought maybe that it was the right direction, but in a way, it kind of was one step forward, many steps backward, because it took from then to now for things to kind of open up again as far as research, because of all this. A lot of people had a lot of bad experiences with psychedelics, and now there's...
came home from college to find all my friends doing speed.
No, that's too bad.
And they're...
That's terrible.
You know, all these guys walking around like zombies with yellow eyeballs, you know.
Ooh, scary. That is scary.
And, you know.
What would that be? That would be amphetamines, like pills? Yeah.
Well, they were actually...
So sad. That's sad. Yeah, hard drugs are really... Psychedelics are one thing, and you need to be ready. You need to be reverent and respectful.
Yeah.
But the hard drugs can really spiral out of control to the point where you're kind of, like you said, like the yellow eyes and the zombie behavior is very sad. You can lose touch a bit.
You mean,
and get lost for some years if you're lucky. Some people die.
I was just sitting there at a club with some of these guys, and one of the guys I was sitting with, his brother just went off on this guy for no reason. He just beat the crap out of him right there on the floor.
That was gnarly.
Which was, because he was
like possessed. Yeah, it's scary.
But, you know, I'm...
That's why we like Herb Daily.
That's why we like cannabis.
Yeah, it's a flower, the healing.
I can't say these days, you know, in my older years, I live up to that name. I'm more like my Irish name, Herb Occasionally.
I like that. I like that. That's fine. And, you know, that's one thing that I'm kind of funny. I want to learn about because it was a different time and you were in Jamaica. Do you, like, I'm a nerd about the varieties and the different types of cultivars. Was it like a sativa style, flimsy? Did you ever see the flowers?
There was a lot of indica there.
Okay, cool.
Because a lot of these, I mean, the word ganja is Indian.
It's India, yeah. Ganja. Mm-hmm.
A lot of, from descendants of immigrants from India and China.
I see. Because it's a colony, the British.
Yeah, it was a British colony.
British colony. So there's a bit. That was right. Yeah, that's right.
And that's, of course, where all those, you know, tropical fruits they grow there, like guava and mango and papaya, come from somewhere else.
From somewhere else, yeah.
The Pacific Islands.
That's right. How fascinating. What a cool place. Anyway, yeah.
It was.
Yeah, I'd like to, I imagine, a lot of my favorite reggae albums were like that time you were in Jamaica, the early 70s, mid 70s.
Yeah, the 70s.
It had a very specific.
I appreciated a lot of the music that I heard, of course, before I
got there. But I'm thinking later, too, like, did you ever go back? Or I imagine you kept in touch with artists.
I went back in 1978 for a couple of months.
Nice.
But ran out of money.
It's hard.
I couldn't stay there, so.
Yeah, sure.
But haven't been back there since.
Yeah.
Although, I've been in touch with a lot of people who.
Yeah, like tonight, you're performing. The showcase today. The conversation we were talking about too is like the Santa Cruz sound, and in many ways, I feel like you've been an ambassador locally to a classic reggae sound with. Playing bass. Maybe we could talk about that, how you decided to start playing bass. Because tonight you're playing bass, not guitar.
When I was with the Rastafarians, I was their lead guitarist.
That's right.
And Haile Muskell, or Michael Ashley, which was his born name, who'd played, he had backed Ezra Vibration and Sugar Minot in the studio. And so, he had some real experience. And, of course, he came out to California with Russ Michael as his bass player. And, they stayed out here for,
a
few years.
Yeah.
And, it was just what happened was that we had a manager, executive producer, money man, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah, sure.
He had started out as a hotshot real estate guy right out of the army. He had sold a few houses with other people's money and made tidy profit off of it.
Yeah.
Then he realized that it wasn't the value of the places going up, it was the value of the money going down.
Ooh.
So he's invested in gold, and this is right around the time, right before the time when they took the controls off
the gold standard,
$35 an ounce forever, and they took that off, and the price of gold shot up to, like, you know, close to $900.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, he was a very, very rich man.
Oh, my gosh.
But then the IRS came after him.
Because he hadn't been claiming the tax on that appreciation.
And he went to see a guy named Kirby Hensley in Modesto, who was the founder of the Universal Life Church.
Oh, boy.
And he came back, and he just went the full nine yards on the Universal Life Church. I mean, he
was a believer.
Bronze plaque on his split-level house in Aptos that said, you know, ULC Monastery.
Yeah, he was in.
And, you know, made his wife and little kids apprentice monks. You know, just wow. Did the whole nine yards.
Oh, boy.
And since, you know, like, he gave all his money to the church, but, you know, meanwhile, he's the church.
So. Oh, boy, that's classic.
But the, yeah, anyway, the thing is, it caught up with him in a couple of years when, you know, we had a disagreement with him over, you know, a new contract that he wanted to pull up. And then before that could be resolved, the IRS came after him for, like, maybe close to $900,000 in back taxes.
Boy, and, ouch.
And all of a sudden, he was gone along with his family and all his belongings. And
oh, wow.
He just, and all of a sudden, we didn't have anybody to, you know, sponsor us.
Yeah.
So this guy came up from L.A. and said if we moved down there, he'd make us big stars and everything. But I didn't really trust him as far as I could throw him.
Yeah.
And so they
sounds a little slimy.
I reluctantly quit the band.
Wow. So that's how you left the Rastafarians.
Yeah.
Wow. And you were with them for some time.
I retired from music for a couple of years. But
wow.
Then I wanted to start it up again. I just couldn't find a bass player. Who, you know,
yeah.
Could do what
come correct.
Moskel did. So,
sure.
You know, I bought myself an old bass from, like, for about $80 from a guy who's going to prison. It turned out to be like a Fender Precision.
That's a nice bass.
That's like worth four figures now.
Yeah. Wow.
But,
how cool.
You know, so that's when I started. That was like in maybe the mid 80s.
And what was the sound like then? It was, because I feel like reggae has changed. I don't want to bring up the modern sound, but it was different in the 80s.
Well, yeah, it was different.
Everything changes.
It was different in the 60s than it was in the 70s.
Yeah, of course.
In the 80s.
Of course.
But yeah, you know, the mid 80s was about the time when the electro sound took over.
Yeah, sure.
And kind of introduced everything to dancehall.
Yeah.
Which is,
speak to that, or define it for those that don't know it.
I've never been a big
me neither.
Fan of dancehall. I mean, there are a couple of things that
There's a couple artists like Yellow Man.
That was like, you know, 80s dancehall. Like,
it's not the modern dancehall.
Although, you know, a couple of DJs I know, these ladies by the name of Green Bee, I don't know if you know her.
I've been to Reggae on the River, and she's been a selector at Reggae on the River.
Danica and some of those others would play these. What I didn't like about dancehall is mostly that, you know, they took the bass line out of it. You know, they just boom, boom,
yeah.
Boom, boom.
It's no, yeah.
But the stuff she played was both modern, and the two ladies played was both modern and had, you know, some wicked bass lines.
Nice. So, yeah. Nice.
Anyway, you know, so there's a lot of dancehall like that. That's, yeah. Meets with my approval.
I'm with you.
Whatever that's.
I'm with you. Yeah, I feel like, for me, dancehall is, it's amazing how friends of mine and, like, IK Linda and DJ Splees, they love it.
Oh, yeah.
And
they'll be there tonight, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Give my regards to Rich. Say hi. He plays amazing. So I love working with DJ Splees, DJ Daddy Splees.
Splees introduced himself in Fresno to me. Wow. Back in the 90s.
Yep, yep. When we That's his there. Roots. This is Fresno. Yeah. He's from Fresno.
And he pulled out of his crate the Rastafarian's album.
No way.
And had me sign it.
You know? Oh, that's cool. What a great story.
He was probably back in, way in his 20s.
Yeah, then, he know, was a young, yeah, young man.
Young guy.
Yeah.
This is about the, maybe the...
If it was Fresno, that was his early days. Yeah. It's amazing. So that's a great... thanks for sharing that. That's cool. So you've known him a long time. Yeah. Yeah. Probably everybody in this town in the reggae community.
It's great that he's ended up here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's really special to... For another generation like us and then some of the even younger players to get to know you and people like Spleece. It's very special. It's nice. We have a nice little community in Santa Cruz. To kind of bring it full circle with Santa Cruz Voice and our little...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's very special.
It's good to see the support never really faded out completely from, you know, I mean... Back in the old days, I got to admit, had Bob Marley at the Civic.
That's right.
For two shows, both sold out.
Wow. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Jimmy Cliff, I think the same thing with him. So
cool. It's a big place, Civic.
But and remember opening for the Meditations and the Itals. At nice. The Civic, and that show was packed.
Yeah, yeah. So, Rasta Cruz.
So I mean, you know, you know how the capacity of the
Huge.
Civic compared to the capacity of say Moe's or something.
Yeah, no, it's so the manyfold
Civic has shrunk down some, but it's
still know, probably the one of the largest venues around.
It's still, yeah. I mean,
yeah, it's amazing.
It's still going strong.
Which is great.
Good thing to see.
Yeah, very good thing. In our last couple minutes, this hour flew fast.
It did.
It went really fast. I feel like we just warmed up, and I have music and things. We should do it again sometime. But what would you like to say to those listening, or if we share this later, any aspiring players? Just some words of wisdom or anything you want to share or any advice?
Well, no, I mean, after doing a lot of projects and writing original bass lines and all, I find myself gravitating back to the old music that made me fall in love with reggae in the first place. The stuff that was, and that's pretty much what Boomdraw does, is we play the... the Jamaican hits that, the rock steady hits. Rock steady kind of brought Jamaican music out of ska and into reggae. So it was very influential. And, that's the kind of music I've been singing ever since, I've been singing the last few years. And that's the kind of music that
it's beautiful.
Love to sing.
Yeah, I love it too. It's a beautiful thing.
And hopefully we can, you know, by playing it and playing it the way it's supposed to be played, we'll bring some people into it.
Yeah. Let's do it.
I hear you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Herb Daly.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Really appreciate it.
And have a wonderful show. Break a Leg. I imagine you guys have a big crowd. And if you're looking for some true reggae music, come through Moe's Alley, Boomdraw, and the Wailing Souls. I'm Christopher Carr. This is the Cannabis Connection. Have a great weekend. Perfect.